Our top story this hour, the head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization says the Islamic Republic has no reservation about advancing its nuclear program, adding the country will not give up on its national interests. Mohammad Islami made the remark during a joint presser with the visiting head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi. The two officials held talks for a second day in Tehran. Regarding claims on uranium enrichment, Islami said the IAEA's report has confirmed Iran has not enriched uranium beyond its declared 60%. He added the issue has now been resolved between the two sides. Islami underlined that the meetings show Tehran and the IAEA maintain professional relationship. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog said his meetings in Iran have taken place in an atmosphere of honesty and cooperation. Grossi also condemned as outlawed any military attack on nuclear facilities around the world, including in Iran. He noted that all states must join the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. Let me bring in Sayed Mustafa Khoshchashm, a political analyst from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Mr. Khoshchashm, firstly, what did you make of the press conference itself? I was getting to the issue of Israel. Will the IAEA inspect Israel's nuclear armed facilities? Grossi said Iran, well, is part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT, which obliges the IAEA to inspect Iran's nuclear facilities. He said a small number of countries are not part of the NPT, so the IAEA does not inspect their facilities. This includes the Israeli entity. Why isn't he pressing the Israeli regime to join the NPT? Why didn't he condemn, for example, the Israel for not joining the NPT? It was a very diplomatic answer from a man in a position of power. What's your thoughts?
Hello, and thanks for having me. Well, there are too many points to be raised at the press conference, including those that you just mentioned. First of all, about the outcome of this press conference and the meetings that Mr. Grossi has had with Mr. Islami and the foreign minister, Mr. Amir Abdullahian. Well, I believe the two sides are trying to keep the atmosphere calm and positive until his later meeting with President Raisi. I believe we need to wait and wait for a better picture when he holds his meeting with President Raisi. Until then, it could be said that, as you just mentioned, Mr. Grossi was just maneuvering around the questions. Another point pertained to Israel. You're right. Technically speaking, his explanation was right. Israel is no member to the NPT, is not a signatory to the NPT, but Iran is. That's why Iran is under so much pressure and so much inspections. Iran has been under the largest number of man hours of inspections before, during, and after the JCPOA. And Israel has never been under any such inspections. Well, technically true, but that was the awful answer that an official could give to the reporters, because this means, in essence, if you undertake commitments and obligations to prove your goodwill to the whole world, then you go under pressure, under so many inspections. But if you are a rogue regime, like the Zionist regime, you are not undertaking anything, and you are at war with everyone around you, and you have occupied these lands and torturing them, killing them, massacring them, and extending around the clock. And if you are in other countries' full nuclear scientists, and you sabotage activities, and you're proud of that, and your allies acknowledge that you have done that, and if you do threats, like the last threat that came from Israeli Premier Netanyahu, who said we need to attack the Iranian nuclear facilities, and we are preparing for that, we are drawing plans for that, alongside the United States, that has always been saying that military resort is also on the table, is an option, then if you are such a rogue regime. You are under no pressure. You're doing nothing. It's not just the IAEA. I believe it's an embarrassment to the UN Security Council. It's an embarrassment to the UN and to the world community. Of those that are more responsible, they are under much pressures. But the and you have never found even a shred of evidence that Iran has gone astray from its peaceful nuclear program. While the Israeli regime has been proud to keep an ambiguous atmosphere at best, in certain cases, allies like former U.S. President Jimmy Carter and many others have stressed that Israel is armed with military nuclear technology, and the Israeli one of the Israeli scientists, at least we know, has made so many acknowledgments about that, and they arrested him, of course, later. Well, they are under no such pressure, even though they are a belligerent regime. They are killing others, they are threatening others, and they are a source of instability in the entire Middle East. Even if you are the only armed state, nuclear armed state or regime in the entire Middle East, you are playing with fire in the Middle East, and you are threatening others, and you are following and pursuing your expansionist plans towards the Euphrates and towards Iran. So basically speaking, that was an embarrassment for the world community, for the UN Security Council. Another point that he maneuvered around and was very important was that he said, well, in response to a question that some states want to use their influence, but the IAEA is not a political tool. It's not influenced by the other parties when it comes to cooperation with Iran. Totally false, totally false. And I was surprised to hear that from the IAEA chief. Well, the three safeguard agreement cases that are still open and they are bones of contention between Iran and the IAEA, they have been a major hurdle to the resumption of the JCPOA. Where did they come from? From the Israeli regime. This is no secret. The entire world knows about that. After the Israelis alleged that they've taken documents from Iran, they presented it to the Americans and to the IAEA. All these documents, I mean, safeguard bones of contention started after the Israeli regime provided these alleged documents, fake documents, to the IAEA. There has been no other source, absolutely none. Even the IAEA has acknowledged that. That would you know, pertain to these three cases. That's an important issue. And also, the Messageros issue explained why, when we were on the threshold of the talks in Vienna in the last round in summer, why did he pay such a controversial visit to Israel to you know, send pulses to Iran? Why? Right. As he said, is no member of the NPT, and it shouldn't be involved in Iran's case. Then, on the eve of the talks, he paid a meaningful visit to Israel.
Sayyid Mustafa Khoshchesh, thank you very much indeed for your analysis. Sayyid Mustafa Khoshchesh is a political analyst joining us live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. The United States plans to send a new shipment of weapons and other military equipment to Ukraine, despite Russia's warnings against arms deliveries to Kiev. The new package is worth $400 million. It includes tactical bridges to move tanks and armored vehicles for the first time. The military assistance will not need congressional approval to go ahead. The U.S. and its NATO allies have provided tens of billions of dollars in financial and military aid to Ukraine over the past year. Russia has repeatedly warned against the influx of weapons to Kiev. Moscow says arming Ukraine will only prolong the war. Now, moving on with other news, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has criticized an Israeli minister's call for the Palestinian village of Hawara to be erased.
The finance minister publicly called for the town of Hawara to be wiped out, an unfathomable statement of incitement to violence and hostility. The situation in the occupied Palestinian territory is a tragedy. A tragedy above all for the Palestinian people. Over half a century of occupation has led to widening dispossession, deepening deprivation, and recurring and severe violations of their rights, including the right to life. Nobody could wish to live this way or imagine that forcing people into conditions of such desperation can lead to an enduring solution.
Turk was addressing the Geneva-based UN Human Rights Council, where he presented a report amid escalating violence in the occupied West Bank. He was referring to remarks by Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, after hundreds of Israeli settlers went on a rampage in Hawara and nearby villages in the northern West Bank. One Palestinian was killed and at least 390 injured in the attacks, while dozens of houses and cars were torched. The Israeli settlers were angered by the killing of two Israeli brothers in a Palestinian retaliatory operation in Hawara. The European Union's envoy, as well as many others to Palestine, has also called for accountability. Perpetrators of the rampage brought to justice. In Greece, clashes break out between police and demonstrators outside Parliament over a deadly train crash that left dozens dead. The violence erupted in central Athens after police tried to disperse the protesters with tear gas. The protesters responded with petrol bombs and fireworks. Thousands have taken to the streets to demand justice for the victims of the country's worst train tragedy that took place this week. They are angry over the failures of successive governments to improve rail network safety. Similar protests were held in other cities as well. A passenger train collided head-on with a cargo train in central Greece late on Tuesday. It killed at least 57 people, many of them students. The government says human error is to blame, but unions say it was caused by a lack of maintenance and faulty signalling. Belgian farmers have staged a tractor protest in Brussels to denounce the government's plan to limit nitrogen emissions. The farmers from the northern region of Flanders blocked the city streets with nearly 3,000 tractors. Now, agricultural organizations say the nitrogen plan will cause socio-economic carnage and must be amended to better reflect future prospects for the farm sector. Protesters also say the restrictions disproportionately target the agricultural sector compared to the industrial domain. The levels of nitrogen oxides in the air and water in Belgium as well as the Netherlands are higher than EU regulations and threaten the environment. That has been blamed on large numbers of livestock and the heavy use of fertilizers as well as traffic and construction. The United Nations accuses Myanmar's junta of creating a human rights crisis in the country by waging war on its own people. In a report, the UN Human Rights Office describes the situation in Myanmar as festering catastrophe. The authority documents cases of human rights violations since February 2021, when the junta seized power in a coup. The report says the military has killed nearly 3,000 people and arrested more than 17,000 others. The report says this is done with complete impunity and has forced over 1 million people from their homes since 2021. It urges the military rulers to immediately end the violence. The junta has defended its actions as a legitimate campaign to stem what it calls terrorists. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip have held a large rally to support the occupied West Bank and El Quds. Ashraf Shannon has more.
A big rally was held in the blockaded Gaza Strip following the Friday prayers to support Palestinians in the Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank in the face of rising Israeli settlers' aggression against Palestinians. People from all walks of life came out to express their commitment to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been skyrocketed in the recent days as extremist Israeli settlers under the protection of Israeli regime forces went on a rampage in the occupied West Bank villages torching dozens of houses and cars. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the upcoming holy month of Ramadan will witness an increase in resistance against the Israeli regime.
We vow to make the holy month of Ramadan as a month of renewing our commitment to defending Al-Aqsa Mosque and Palestine. The holy month of Ramadan will be a month of mercy and unity among Palestinians, while we turn it into a month of hellfire that will burn the occupiers and the Israeli settlers.
Israeli forces and settlers' attacks since the start of 2023 have claimed the lives of some 70 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and called on all Muslims to support Palestinians and help defend Al-Quds.
We call on our brothers in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank to remain strong and steadfast. We will always support them, and we demand all Muslims and Arabs to support them in the face of settlers' attacks.
Latest figures show that the Israeli settlers' population in the occupied West Bank has grown to more than 500,000 as of January 2020. This is while some 200,000 settlers reside in Al-Quds. The Hamas movement stressed that Palestinians will remain united in the face of all Israeli aggressions.
We are here to support the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, and we say to the Zionist regime and those who support it that the Palestinian revolution and the resistance will not stop and will spread to all Palestinian cities. This protest is sending a message of unity against the Zionist regime and the radical right-wing Zionist cabinet that continues to kill and maim Palestinians.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them.
Palestinians here are calling for stepping up armed resistance against the Israeli regime in order to foil all plots against Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit. But behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. a prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-Plot, this is where all the medical testing and human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on, like, two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time, because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common, a culture of secrecy.
You're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry...
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, and it was secure.
...are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action. Lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world, if they would have informed us back then, that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have made it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day.
Okay. So
all day long people were coming.
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland, the birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow was acting in its own interest, so Dow was trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. I don't even know if you can see any of them over here. But 18 years and the land is very fertile. And it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have 5 kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. Some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's. This is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelter's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, 3 times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards like Alice Buchelter's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Xuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there's no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They are dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Xuan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells, like in Shakya's family home. They've lived in this house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. I am at your service to talk about another strategy that helps us enjoy a more appropriate life based on the concepts of the Quran and Islamic narrations. Today, I want to talk about self-love. Before going to the core of my speech and to describe whatever I am going to say something positive about it or negative, prior to that, I need to add a psychological point here, which is, whatever we mankind do is somehow because we love ourselves and because the benefit of what we do comes back and returns back to us. For example, if I love a delicious food, it is because eating it is enjoyable to me. The benefit of it comes back to myself. Self-love is a part of our nature. Is a part of our instinct, and it makes us keep ourselves healthy because we love ourselves. It helps us not to endanger ourselves and to abandon what we hate and try to achieve what we think is useful and beneficial. Even those who commit suicide, it is emanated from self-love. How? Because the person who commits suicide thinks that by dying or killing himself, he will free himself from the severe hardship he is dealing with in his life. Or in other words, although the person who commits suicide is extremely anxious and restless, but because he thinks that the difficulty he has in his life is more difficult and more intense, he decides to commit suicide in order to completely put an end to that hardships and difficulties. Again, due to this self-love, we as Muslims to be more connected to God, try to be a good worshipper, to finally receive in the day of judgment the blessing of the heaven and release ourselves from the hellfire. Why we are going to be more connected? Because we love ourselves.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, be with me far the way.
Even in this world, when we love our children or wife or relatives, it is because we feel comfortable when we are with them, and when we see them and deal with them. As a result, it is written in the Quran that in the day of judgment, when a great criminal becomes subject to fire, his self-love becomes so intense that, as the Quran says, let's read these verses, يود المجرم لو يفتدي من عذاب يومئذ ببنيه. In the day of judgment, the sinner even wishes that he could sacrifice his children as ransom to save himself. وصاحبته وأخيه, and to sacrifice his wife and his brother. وفصيلته التي تؤويه, and his tribe and relatives who supported him throughout his life. God says in more general view here, وَمَنْ فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا ثُمَّ يُنْجِيهِ, and all people on the earth to get released from the divine chastisement. Then Allah adds that it is impossible. Now, when the boundary of self-love has become a little clear, I add my main point, which is that self-love sometimes goes beyond the limit. It transgresses the boundary and leads to a form of self-admiration. And what I mean by it is that a man becomes, it leads to egoistic. The man will become so proud of himself, and this feeling would become so high that the man would never criticize himself and imagines that everything he does is correct and no one should blame him. Let's take a break and I will be back in no time.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
I was talking about the common feeling that is created in our nature, which is that we love ourselves. And if we love others, it is stemmed from the fact that we love ourselves. And because of this, we show mercy to other people, because the benefit of it returns back to us. This feeling has many benefits for us, can lead us to self-confidence. It allows us to protect ourselves and also defend our beliefs. But if this feeling exceeds its normal degree, it brings about many negative side effects to an individual. One of these negative outcomes is that such a man thinks everything he does is the best. His own decision is the only practical, not what others decide. He would think he is more intellectual and is in higher rank. Such person would not criticize himself, but is prone to criticize others' opinions. Imam Ali, in one of his noble saying, points to this negative effect of self-admiration and says, "He who admires himself attracts many opponents against him." A self-satisfied person expects others to respect him and to honor him a lot, to greet him, to give him a chair in a meeting, not to say a word against his opinion, and to constantly praise him. But when he does not see such respect from others, on the other hand, people recognize him in his normal position and not what he claims, he becomes pessimistic towards people and may open his tongue to slander and blame others and start to argue. We can guess that to what extent this bad behavior can cause others discomfort and bring about hatred. In other words, this ugly trait both makes the man angry towards people, those people who he thinks they do not respect him enough and do not appreciate him as he expects, and also make people angry towards him. On the contrary, those who put themselves in the position of being criticized, they say, if others criticize us, it is normal. And those who deal with people in humble and modest way, they consider themselves someone like others and they constantly respect others. They are more respectful and personable. It is something that our experience shows. Ibn Abil Hadid, a famous man in Arabic literatures and Islamic traditions, narrates from some scholars that someone came to him The man was very satisfied with the book he has written. The scholar said to the writer of the book, "People do not value your book that much." And the man said, "People are ignorant." The scholar replied, "Are you against them?" The writer of the book said, "Yes." The scholar said, "Therefore, you are ignorant in accordance to the great majority of people. But people are ignorant only according to your own personal view. Which is more correct, a single man who is you or the majority of people? The fact is that everyone has his own share of knowledge and understanding. If I, for example, know something that others do not know it, other people also have their own specific knowledge and experience that I do not know. Among ordinary people, there is no one to be so perfect that no one reaches his level in any situation and any matter. As much as we feel that what we know is useful to others, others also would think that their knowledge is useful to us. As a result, self-love should just be limited to the degree that causes confidence and bring about self-esteem. And it should never make us uncritical, arrogant, and unchangeable. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sadorbat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines this hour. The heads of the IAEA and Iran's Atomic Energy Organization described the latest talks as constructive, saying that mutual cooperation will continue. The Russian defense minister pays a rare visit to troops deployed in Ukraine as battles go on for the control of the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. And Tunisians hold new protests against President Kais Saied over his growing power and what they see as a crackdown on opponents.